Come Read With Me. I'm Jeff, and this is my world. This podcast is about getting to know my friends better by reading a book with them and discussing it. Some of these friends read a lot, some read a little, and some, honestly, I'm not sure can read, but we'll find out, that's for sure. Today's guest reader is Jess. Jess and I have known each other for a little over 10 years. We met at Camp Fuller in Rhode Island, where I was an awkward out-of-state counselor, and she was an older camper, and she currently works in Brown Bookstore at the university, and she's always been really active in women's and sexual health organizations, which I think is really cool, and we're going to talk about that later. I do feel ashamed. I've only seen her once since I moved to Boston, but we're hanging out now, so that's what matters. So, welcome, Jess.
Thank you, Jeff.
Tell us more about what you're doing and if you enjoy it.
Okay, right now I work at the Brown University Bookstore, which is apparently, or as advertised, one of the largest indie bookstores in New England.
I'll have to check that out.
It is pretty substantial. It's honestly a beautiful bookstore. There's just a huge selection. It's a really nice spot for independent books. We have a lot of independent bookstores in Providence.
Really? I'll have to come back.
In Rhode Island in general. But it's nice. It's got a nice coffee shop in it. I don't drink coffee, but whatever.
No caffeine, period?
Not generally. Like, sometimes I'll get a tea.
It's impressive.
I know. I've made it this far. It's almost stubborn at this point. I tell people I don't drink coffee, and they don't even understand how I live, and neither do I.
Yeah. So what do you do at the bookstore?
I actually work in the technology center.
Oh, cool.
Which is sort of weird, because I am really into books and not quite aggressively into technology. Mm-hmm. I have a computer that I know how to turn on, which is pretty exciting. But for some reason, they just thought fit to send me to the technology center, and I've learned a lot more about computers.
That's awesome.
Which is good. I feel like I would fit in better with the book part, because I love to read, and I did writing in college, and I took a lot of literature classes.
Yeah.
But I appreciate that I've been able to get out of my comfort zone and learn something that I didn't really know about. So now I know more about computers than just turning them on.
Yeah. So that's awesome. So is it IT or are you selling?
Mostly selling. Oh, we do have an IT department, and that's usually involves me like, oh, you have a computer problem? Let me gently escort you over here to the people who can answer questions.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be temporary. I was hired for the beginning of school year textbook rush.
Yeah.
And they ended up keeping me. I was interested in something temporary at the time, because I was like, this will give me some income while I'm looking for different work.
Yeah.
But it's giving me income a little longer term while I look for other work.
What do you eventually want to end up doing?
Some kind of writing, ideally. I'm not that picky.
Yeah. Like communications writing, or more like journalistic?
More communications writing than journalism.
Oh, okay.
So I'm looking for all sorts of stuff that is writing themed. I'm mostly sticking to Rhode Island, because I love Rhode Island and I want to... It's home, and I'm close enough to Massachusetts and Connecticut that I could go out of state, and I have taken interviews out of state, but I would love to
stay here
and stimulate our local economy.
Have you been back to Fuller at all recently?
I went for the alumni event in August.
Okay. How is it? I know they did that big boathouse.
It's huge. It's a monster.
It looks beautiful from the photos I've seen. I have to go down and see it.
I went for the dedication, it's so weird to see a new boathouse.
Yeah.
But it's grand. Like, yeah. It is.
Well, and it'll stand the test of time. That other one,
ideally.
It looked like it would just, you could throw a rock at it.
That did last for a long time.
Yeah.
Shockingly. Yeah. It looks like it was built to last, and it looks beautiful. It's huge. And I want to say it's out of place
on camp, but
I think if you saw the boathouse, you would expect the rest of Fuller to look like Harvard or Hogwarts.
Yeah.
But it is really beautiful, and it's always nice to go back.
So many good memories. All right, so how did you settle on Dr. I'm not going to call him Mutter, because I think the damn umlaut's a pain in the ass. Dr. Mutter's Marvels. How did you settle on this one? Because I know you threw out a couple of choices.
I sent you a bunch... Maybe a bunch is exaggerating. I sent you a pretty decent handful of ideas. And so I would argue that you picked this one.
Okay. What were the other ones? Do you remember?
I talked about when I sent the link for this one, I also sent the link for Smoke Gets in Your Eyes by Caitlin Doughty.
Okay.
Who is the founder of Death Salon and basically like the face of the death positive movement in the United States.
Uh-huh.
the new Sarah Vowell book, which I think at the time wasn't out yet. Okay. I know it was. Oh, it's about right. the Marquis de Lafayette.
Yes.
I love Sarah Vowell. When we first started talking, it was right before when Ghost at a Watchmen was coming out.
Oh, that's the one I'm remembering.
And that was, we're like, oh, I don't know. I still haven't read it.
I don't know if I'm going to.
Oh, I feel like I waited so long for a new Harper Lee book to come out. Like, it just, there's some things you just aren't going to happen. Like, hell's going to freeze over before Harper Lee releases a new book. And because of all the potential controversy around it, I feel so uncomfortable.
Yeah, well, I also feel like going back, you know, like 5 years from now and reading it, when all of the controversy isn't fresh, and like you've had that time to just digest that it is, yes, it's the same characters, but it's a completely different story that was abandoned. I think it might be a little bit easier to read. Do you feel like with all of the hoopla around it recently, it's just kind of like, you can't read it and not have your judgment clouded?
Right.
That's the one I remember, because if I was going to do it, I'll do it for a podcast with my aunt, who her all-time favorite book is To Kill a Mockingbird. So sort of like, so many options. Okay.
It's definitely one of my favorites. In my pleasure reading, I'm not a great reader of classics, but that's a book that I've come back to several times. Did it in middle school, did it in high school, and I've reread it a few times since college.
Okay.
And I love it. My mom actually read it fairly recently for the first time ever. Somehow she missed out on it at school, and I was so excited for her. I was like, oh my God, I can't
believe. Did she like it?
She did.
Oh, good.
I would have probably disowned her if she didn't. Because it's just, with a book you love, to see someone else discover it, I'm sure you
can. Yeah.
It's just, no one reads, it's so my exciting. Books.
We did a Jane Austen book club that I did not suggest. I wouldn't say she was panned by everyone. Everyone really enjoyed Pride and Prejudice, which I expected. But we read all six of them. Two of us had read all of them at least once. Two had read none of them. And then the other two had read a couple of them here and there. So it was very interesting. It was a very interesting group of people because, you know, it was four women and two men, and the other man was straight. So it was a very interesting group of people to get their opinion. The things that they got stuck on or focused on were like, it's like, that's not normal. Like, that's what I was thinking. I was like, wait, but they're actually reading it as just a normal, quote unquote, average reader, not someone who's read it six times or three times. But yeah, it was a little disheartening for everyone to be like, everyone found something they liked about each book. Everyone found something, like, each one of us had one book we don't like. And like, I despise Emma. I just do. If everyone would have hated every book, I would have just, like, left crying. I would have been like, no!
This is the worst book club ever. Yes. I have a big, quite weathered-looking volume of all the Jane Austen novels. Compendium. Oh, yeah. And I've never felt inspired to read Emma. My 7th grade English teacher, who was the one who introduced me to Pride and Prejudice, was like, don't bother with Emma.
Yeah.
She really hated it. And I was like, I'm not feeling that inspired to read it. Love Pride and Prejudice. I reread it pretty recently, actually, sometime in the last year. Okay. And
it still holds up.
It's totally still holds up. And as an adult, I appreciated the humor of it so much more.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
All of them are so witty. Like,
she's so funny.
Can't get over it. And I read a new modern adaptation that's going to be released where they did a gender swap.
Wow.
So, like, Darcy is a woman, Elizabeth is a man, Bingley's a woman, Charlotte's a man. Yeah, it was really interesting, the dynamics.
This might be the first Pride and Prejudice adaptation I'm actually interested in reading.
I think you would like it. And I wish
so
you
So it's
would...
fan fiction.
Yeah, they're all fan fiction.
Of course.
But there are legitimized fan fiction.
Once they get a publisher, I think they escape that title.
They do,
reason.
But I still call them that. Like, it's so... I think they call it inspired fiction when it becomes published. The only thing I didn't like was the cover. Like, it's a very... And I don't think you're supposed to like it. It's like an old-fashioned portrait with, like, aviators and an iPad and headphones. Like, it's very disjointed.
I would definitely read that. And I'm usually very anti Pride and Prejudice adaptations. I read a few when I was younger. I just don't think most people who want to write books based on what other people have written and don't want to be creative enough to write their own thing, I don't think that they can stand up to Austen.
Almost all of them cannot. There are only three The best ones actually take themselves away from Austin. So, like, they use her as inspiration. Mm-hmm. So they'll modernize it and they'll use the same character names, or they'll modernize it and just use, like, Darcy and Bennett. And the storyline follows. This is going to be all about Austin, not about
Sounds
this.
Sounds good.
Did you read either of the mashups? So Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, or Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters?
I haven't. I know they exist.
Okay. If you're going to read one, I would recommend Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters, because they've moved it enough. So, like, rather than having them go to Bath, they go to this underwater sea station. So, like, it's removed just enough, and it's blended a little bit better. There's a whole genre of them. The Jane Austen fan fiction-inspired fiction. I guess it would all be inspired because most of it's published. Knows no bounds. The one I have yet to read and I've had for a long time is the one, I guess it would be erotic. It's called Spank Me, Mr. Darcy.
You guess that would be erotic.
Well, I thought Mr. Darcy Unleashed was going to be erotic, but that was just about a dog show. I was like, so I have no idea.
Biggest disappointment ever.
Yes.
Although I do enjoy a dog show, don't get me wrong.
That one was good too. So back to the original book.
Dr. Mutter's Marvels by Kristen O'Keefe Aptwitz. The author, Kristen O'Keefe Aptwitz, was definitely a big part of why I chose it.
Okay.
She is a poet. She lives in Austin now, but she was in New York for a long time.
Okay.
I believe she was the founder of the New York City Urbana Poetry Slam back in the 90s.
Wow.
When I think she was still in college at the time, but that's become a big multi-headed beast of slam poetry in New York, in a good way. But I love her poetry. I have since I probably started reading her poetry when I was in high school.
Wow.
She released a new volume of poetry fairly recently that brought her back into my brain, because I just don't read poetry the way that I did when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
But I read a short review of the new book, which is called The Year of No Mistakes, in a magazine.
Okay.
And it's about the end of a long relationship. I read it shortly after my last relationship ended, and my brain exploded. It's a beautiful volume of poetry if you like relationships ending and crying. But it was
the type of music that I like, so maybe I'll like that poetry.
No, I highly recommend it. It's a beautiful book. So that had her swirling back around in my brain after a pretty long absence of not reading poetry. I thought it was really interesting that she had written a book about the founder of the Mutter Museum in Philadelphia, because I had been hearing about that for a long time.
Okay.
I've never been to Philadelphia. I've never been to the museum. But I knew that it was a museum of medical artifacts, a lot of them very famously being gross and weird, for lack of better words. Grotesque is much better way of describing it.
Did it make you want to go down to the museum more?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I had very little desire to go to Philadelphia. I've been before. I didn't even do the touristy things. I was there. I was on Temple's campus. But it made me want to go because it gave a really interesting history of Philadelphia. It also made the museum sound really fascinating, and they talked about some of the afterward. They talk about the new things that they're doing in the building and that sort of thing. But it made the idea of Philadelphia and its history, like, you know, we all know it's revolutionary history. We're forced to learn it, but it made this next wave of its history much more interesting.
There's so much going on. I had no idea. I really knew nothing about Mutter. Before
him too.
Before I knew nothing about him before I read the book, and I probably had some incorrect assumptions about him based on what I knew about the museum. I incorrectly assumed he would be a creep, and he was as far from that as humanly possible. He wasn't collecting hearts in jars or whatever because he was a serial killer. He was someone who was really dedicated to helping people who had real serious deformities.
Yeah. Well, let's hold on to that. So when we come back, we will be discussing in further depth, which we've already started, Dr. Mutter's Marvels, referring to it as Dr. Mutter. And we are back to discuss Dr. Mutter's Marvels. I'll read the first paragraph. America in the early 1800s was an easy place to die, especially for those unlucky souls so severely deformed that medicine at the time literally classified them as monsters. Enter Thomas Dent Mutter, a brilliant and audacious young mid-19th century plastic surgeon who revolutionized American medicine with his daring surgical work, pioneering the use of anesthesia, championing the sterilization of surgical tools, and advocating for a compassion-based vision for helping even the most seemingly hopeless of patients, despite intense resistance from his numerous rivals. With Dr. Mutter's Marvels, author Kristen O'Keefe Aptowitz gives us both a front-row seat to the good, the bad, and the grotesque of the evolution of American medicine, and a riveting biography of a man so flamboyant in life and in the operating theater that he would be crowned the Barnum of the surgery room. So that is what we are going to discuss. Just as we ended that last section, you were saying that finding out more about him was what you really enjoyed about the book. So the guy, he wasn't this creepy person stealing hearts and putting them in jars. He was collecting specimens, right?
Right.
Now, how did that change your perspective of the museum? You know, you thought it was kind of like what I imagined, like what the freak show booth at the old circus used to be. But now you know why he was collecting them.
Right.
Like, how does that...
Oh, definitely. I feel guilty for just for just assuming that he would be a creep, and it definitely... Yeah, it definitely makes it seem less like a circus freak show to me, which I'm offended. I offend myself for having thought that before.
But at the same time, though, because he was taking them from the people that were collecting them as specimens, monstrosity, you know, as like the freak show that they were. The one thing that stands out to me, he was at a bar in Europe and they had one of the samples on the wall and the guy was like, I make good money letting people touch this or whatever it was. I'll tell you the big topics I wrote down. Medicine was the first one. I guess I knew prior to the invention of anesthesia, they didn't use it. It wasn't fact. Does that make sense?
No.
Like, I guess I never had to think about it.
Right, okay.
But then, like, we're sitting in... So for me, it's like, I think that's really interesting that for you it was the... this man wasn't a freak. He wasn't collecting these things. He was collecting them for medical samples and for, you know, to learn teaching objects. For me, what struck me about the book was the scenes where he's describing the patients being performed on with no anesthesia, and they're just like, you have to do it as fast as possible before the patient dies.
Right.
You have to do it in such a way that they are, you know, when they were describing the consent that the patient has to give, and they're like, as soon as they say yes, you start sawing.
And then as soon as you start sawing, they beg you to stop.
They beg you to stop, they scream, they yell, and like they do that until they actually pass out.
Right.
Like, that was horrifying to me. Like, I don't know, I guess I'm so entrenched in our, you go in, you get gassed, you pass out, you wake up, it's done. You're like, oh, there's no pain because we have drugs.
I don't read a lot of history books for pleasure. Throughout reading this, I was like, I am so glad I live now and not in the 1840s. Life is just grand today in 2015. The amount of mental, emotional, physical trauma to go through.
And added on to that was the fact that there was no standard or no idea of aftercare. Like, that they would just, when she was like, yeah, they just threw them in a carriage and sent them home.
Send them off to the street.
Yeah.
Yeah, incredible.
It goes back to finding out, not only did he collect the specimens, but he was such a big impetus in how modern medicine works, like the cleanliness, the aftercare. You're just like, why aren't we learning about him in high school?
He pioneered was an early champion for so many different ideas. He built a freaking hospital.
Yeah.
Within his medical school, and there was so much pushback with that. Like, it's hard to imagine that people would be like, oh no, why would we need a place for people to recover after having a horrible surgery?
Yeah,
just left out on their own. It's
amazing how much he did. And then
really in 47 years, he died super young. He was very sickly, which makes it even more incredible. He was ill of his life.
Yeah.
Mutter's biggest critic in the medical school, Meigs, was so anti-sterilization. How could ever washing my surgical tools
or your hands
spread disease or wash my hands ever spread a disease?
Oh. And so much of it now seems like common sense. And it's all thanks to this one guy. I'm like you, I don't read a lot of nonfiction, especially historical nonfiction. Is this one, the story I thought was really, really great, and you could tell she did the research, but there was just something, there's that one thing that I can't even think of what it is that was missing, and I feel like if she does a second one, I feel like she's going to have that.
I think the writing was beautiful. I think
that definitely.
If all history books were written by poets, I would be reading a lot more history books.
The next thing on my list was creative nonfiction. You know, how much of it... Overwhelmingly, I think it's fact. obviously right. there's a lot of it that's...
I mean, the sources cited at the end of the book take up a pretty substantial amount.
Yeah.
Did do you they, have those in the
I
book?
Do. Did they change the way... Did they actually do inline citations for yours?
No.
All right, that's one of the things that drove me crazy.
There's all these references and lots of image credits, and there's even an index. I think that if she'd been doing footnotes, this book would have been so much longer.
Maybe that's why I'm thinking it wasn't as seamless, because there were a couple of things where I was like, how does she know this? I want to know how right. she knows this. And when I went to find it, you had to know... I don't even know how the citation system works. I think it was like she put the first few lines of the line right. that she was referring yep. to. And I was like, this is not any normal citation system.
There's so many quotes in here that are so beautifully integrated
yeah.
into the writing. But I did have that thought too. How does she know this? This yeah. seems like so deep and personal to someone's brain. This is how people wrote in their diaries in the mid-19th century?
Yeah.
Wow. We really need to up our games today.
Well, that just makes me think, oh my god, I need to torch everything before I die.
The writing and public speaking, the oration, we're just not at that level anymore.
Yeah.
Everything was so beautiful. I'm sure even people's post-it notes were like Shakespearean sonnets. Because reading these quotes and diary entries from people are really just stunning.
Sort of going along the nonfiction and the creative nonfiction, quote-unquote... the historical fiction. Have you ever read any other science writing? The big one, and the one I compared it to, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks.
I've never read that. It's been permanently on my list of books to read forever.
Definitely recommend it.
Definitely.
I went and saw her speak at Harvard. A student got up, said, hey, you know, I'm a student here. I just wanted to ask how much license you took and why you took license in this book. And Rebecca Skloot was just kind of like, I called it a very polite smackdown.
Right.
And she retweeted that. I was like, yeah, I'm famous. She just goes, you know, I took no creative liberty. When I knew she was at the hospital on this date, I went, I looked up the weather. I said it was raining. I went and looked at a historical photo. There was a tree there that she could easily have stopped under
right.
as she was going in. And I do think Aptowitz did that same sort of research. Right. I really liked it. But you've never read... I can't even think of any
I've
other...
I've never read The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. I actually really enjoy science, but I watch a lot of science documentaries instead of reading. The only real science-y book that I can remember reading somewhat recently would be Bonk by Mary Roach, who wrote Stiff about
these.
The cadavers.
Oh, okay.
Bonk is about sexual research,
oh, okay.
not surprisingly.
Yeah.
That is really fascinating, really interesting. It shows you all of the... Actually, I also read her Life on Mars, which is about astronauts and preparing to go into space, which is also very good. It talks a lot about the history of sexual research and the sexual research that's going on right now. Definitely recommend it. Really interesting. I enjoy nonfiction, mm-hmm. but if it's dry, like I don't want to shade any particular history or science authors, but I need something with some personality. And,
oh, yeah.
and Mary Roach is someone with a lot of personality.
Okay.
It's also why I love Sarah Vowell's books about history.
Okay.
Because a lot of their own experiences as authors and generally funny and interesting people come through. Not that the author here, Kristen Aptowitz, there's nothing interjected here, but I think because she's such a poet and not someone who's writing the definitive piece on Abraham Lincoln. again, not trying to shade anyone.
I don't know.
There were definitely some parts that were missing for me.
Yeah. What was missing?
The biggest thing I noticed, he's married and I don't know, maybe it's just like too quote unquote girly to get like wrapped up on in information like this, but she mentions very briefly several times throughout the novel he was married to his beloved wife.
Mm-hmm.
And if this was, like, you know, he wasn't really that hot on her. He didn't really care for her.
Yeah.
It was a marriage of convenience. He needed somebody with money. I guess I wouldn't have been that interested in her, but because she's repeatedly referred to
dropping
as like,
those hints.
He's like beloved and devoted. So where is she when all of this is happening?
Mm-hmm.
Is there no record of her life?
That's interesting.
I looked it up in the index after reading it. I was like, you know, maybe I just wasn't reading closely enough, but she's only mentioned on like like half a dozen pages, and they're very brief mentions.
Maybe none of her papers survived.
Right. Like, maybe, and maybe he never ever talked about her.
Yeah. Or he only just mentioned dear beloved, or like there's that sort of thing.
Yeah, and definitely, I definitely should be going back through the sources about her.
Yeah.
I didn't investigate the sources that thoroughly, but I really wanted more information about his personal life. And I understand that, you know, this is, as the book says, a true tale of intrigue and innovation at the dawn of modern medicine. So it really is.
She took that focus.
Right. It really is about medicine. And that's something, the singular focus is something that I really have appreciated with some books, like Kay Jamison's book. I loved it. My therapist loaned it to me.
My therapist recommended it to me.
It's so good. And I remember talking about it with my therapist after, and I was like really struck by how little her life is mentioned. But it's really, it really is about her experience with mental illness.
That's going to drive me.
Oh, and Unquiet Mind.
Unquiet Mind,
I kept wanting to say Brain on Fire, which is another health memoir, but I was like, I know it's not that, and then I don't think that actually has anything to do with mental illness. But yeah, that's so focused on her experience as a psychiatrist, and having a mental illness, because she, for you know, people who haven't read it, she is a psychiatrist who
and she's a professor at Johns Hopkins as well.
And it's so, she mentions being married in like a paragraph, and that's it, because it really is about her experience. And that's something that I really appreciated about that book. Mm-hmm. But I think because there is a pretty good amount of information about his personal life and thoughts. They talk a lot about his child, or they, she talks a lot about his childhood and the early deaths of his parents.
Yeah.
I mean, he started off with a really just sad life. Both of his parents died early. He went to live with his grandmother, and she died when he was still young. And then he had to go live with, I think it was like a friend of his father's. And I mean, even if the book wasn't written as well as I think it was written, it's
like, he's still a fascinating person.
So fascinating. And so worth it to read just for the history.
Do you think that the reason he was so successful was because he had that drive? Because everyone died when he was earlier, and like he had to prove himself, and not necessarily prove himself, but like, you know, improve the world.
I mean, I feel like she never really draws that conclusion in the book, because he seems more focused by the talent and interest he knows he had, because like we mentioned, He died when he was 47.
Yeah.
He stopped teaching, I think, when he was about 45.
Yeah, when he was a very fast turnaround.
He was hired to be the head of surgery in this medical school in his early 30s. So he showed so much promise and talent from a very young age.
She might have said this, that he was born in the wrong time. Like, he may have felt like that, like he was born too early, because one, he died so young. He did so much. If he wouldn't have been born, you know, all the big Fs, let's pull someone out of history. How much longer would it have taken for all of this to happen? For him to make that connection that, oh, you have to leave that little quarter of an inch piece of skin attached so that it'll continue to grow and reattach, and then it'll grow back. That sort of cognitive leap, those are the type of people that do change history. But it's really interesting to think, you know, what if something had happened? What if he had died when he was young? Okay. What if he hadn't survived? Like, what the hell would...
And what could he accomplish if he lived another 40 years?
Yeah. Or what could he accomplish if he were born now? Like, say all of this was done, like, he would be the crazy person out there growing hamburger in a petri dish, or doing the I was talking to someone about the tattoos that'll vibrate telling you your phone's ringing. Like, I feel like you'd be that kind of person pushing the boundaries further ahead.
I mean, as readers, it definitely would, we definitely would have benefited from him having been born like 100 years later.
Oh, definitely.
There would be so much more, I think, to work with just, you know, more recent documents and more records. And the author did a really good job of making him a full character and giving a lot of insight into his thoughts and motivations. And you really, there were moments where I definitely teared up, especially as it got to the end, toward the end where he's dying. And, you know, there's just, you realize he died so young, and he had hoped to accomplish so much more in his life. And he, you know, they talk about, like, he really wanted to publish another book, and he was so dedicated to further advancement.
Of the field, not just himself.
Yeah, not just himself. He was so empathetic. He spent so many hours with the students, so many hours with patients. He really, I mean, we could obviously benefit from so many people, so many more people like him. Because these days, it definitely feels like there's not enough.
There's not enough empathy.
There's not enough people like him.
The moment that it got me was at the very, very end when she wrote about how he made his decision to not teach the following semester because he knew he wouldn't be able to finish the semester. And it was like, if he had any thought that he could make it to the last day of the semester and then die, he would have taught.
Right.
Like, he wanted to share everything he knew, and he wanted to spread it. Yeah. He wanted everyone to have access to it, which I thought was so selfless. Yeah. And I think I wish more people knew about him, because it's just so much, there's so much there.
Right.
It's really interesting that he's one of those people that without this book I would never have never seen. At least you knew about his museum. It would be very interesting to have I wouldn't say a feminist revision or a women's revision of this, but sort of what was going on with women at the time.
Right.
It was interesting that she was able to get me interested in another piece of science history that I was like, huh, I want to know about that. And then, the whole sexual health sort of, that was the last thing I wrote on here with women's health and sexual health. You've read a lot more about it than I have, but sort of from this point on, like...
I do want to say before I forget... just that I think if this book had written by a man, there would probably be even less information about all the things that are happening with women. I think a lot of, hashtag not all men, but I think a lot of male authors would have just been like, oh, right, women.
Well, and I think, I also think they would have stripped more of the personal stuff out of it.
Right.
Just in general. Like, they might have said, oh, he was married, and that's it.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely.
As far as the medical stuff goes and how it's evolved, with my limited experience, obviously I'm not a doctor, but I have worked with medical students, and I have seen how in a particular medical school they're instructing gynecological and breast exams. Not to criticize the school in particular. I think that because there's still so much stigma about sexuality, the exams are so awkward.
Yeah.
I think... A lot of these students have been working so hard in their academic careers that they haven't had that much of a dating life. So, frankly, the first time they're doing breast and pelvic exams, you can tell this is the first time they have seen boobs and a vagina in person. It really is. I worked with one student in particular who I remember, like, being completely just silent. And it's like, guys, this is an exam that you have to do as a doctor, and it shouldn't be any more traumatic for you than doing any other kind of exam. It's certainly, a patient is certainly allowed to be stressed out and freaked out by having to expose their genitals and breasts to a stranger, because there's just, a lot of feelings there, especially for different people with different experiences. I think medical school should have a sex education class.
Oh, definitely.
I really do. It's startling to see med students not know the answer to certain questions.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I definitely think you should know that. There really is still so much stigma and shame around sexuality that I think a lot of practitioners are still really awkward about it.
Yeah.
And still really, there's so many accounts of doctors who don't take women's health claims seriously, especially when they're gynecological in nature. It's really frustrating how, especially with gynecological issues, there's a lot of accounts of physicians just really discounting
the
women.
Ball. Yeah.
And that's exactly, in the first chapter you really get about Meigs and his experience as an OBGYN. He's like, I love women. I love my wife. And I've had a million... He had so many kids. He had enough kids for, like, two Partridge Families.
Mm-hmm. And a Brady Bunch.
And a Brady Bunch.
All of them.
He was like, I love women. But the way he talked about them, he clearly thought they were, like, stupid and less than...
Well, they were cattle to him.
Yeah, they were cattle. And then in the later chapter when they finally talk about... women physicians and them being admitted to their society, and like, if we let women be doctors and they're married, they'll neglect their duties at home. What do you care? That's none of your business. Yeah. Get out of my house. Get out of my uterus.
It's the same thing, you know. Isn't it great to see that things have changed so much?
Yeah.
If we let a woman be a president, she's going to nuke someone on her period.
She's going to cry. She's going to have an emotion. Too. But John Boehner got away with crying as Speaker of the House. I'm always surprised he didn't make his self-tanner run with all those steers.
Very true. I could never be president. I would nuke someone because I got mad. Screw reason. No, they pissed me off.
Some of us aren't supposed to be politicians, and also some of us shouldn't have weapons. I don't know.
Oh, I will never buy a gun because I think I would use it.
Right.
It is horrible how little has changed.
Right.
It is interesting to see more and more women are, I say more and more, but it's incremental, are enrolling in public health courses and in medical school. Which is great to see, but there's always more. More can go into it.
Always
it's
going
to take time for systematic change. I think you read my copy of the gay porn star book, My Undoing, Aiden Shaw.
Yes, you lent that to me.
I had it at when camp, we were and I was like, at Fuller. I should not have that at camp.
I remember reading it on the Ripta bus back to after a day off going back to camp.
I found it recently, and I'm going to reread it. I want to see if it holds up. But I can't remember. Did I send you that book? It was a book I'd read in my history of sexuality.
It was about the
class.
History of vibrators.
The history of vibrators.
I had that forever. Did I give that back to you?
No, it doesn't matter. I was like, I can't remember. I loaned it to two people. Yeah. And I couldn't remember, and I was like, I'm pretty sure you were one of them, because it was fascinating, subversive history that travels through all of this. So I think it's really interesting.
I'm sure I still have that book.
Yeah, it's a great book. It was very, the things they use.
Oh my God, like, I know.
Don't come near me with that.
Get
away
from me.
I'm sure it was fine then, but let's not do that again. So any last thoughts on the book? I'm glad you chose it, or I'm glad I chose it from your choices, because it's not something I think I would have gone out of my way to read, which is what this is all about.
Yeah, and normally, like I've said, history books and science books aren't usually at the forefront of what I'm reading. Mm-hmm. So this, in hindsight, I was just thinking about it. It's like, wow, this does seem like kind of a weird choice. But I'm really glad that I read it too. Realizing that when history and science aren't written like a textbook, there is so much to learn. And you get the history and the science in this book. And I really appreciate the quality of the writing. And I really, even though there were points where it's like, you know, where's the source for this? How does she know this? The quotes and letters are integrated so beautifully. Mm-hmm. I think this is a really fine piece of writing, and I'm looking forward to what she is coming out
next.
She
does next, yeah. Well, you're going to have to keep me updated, because I'm horrible about following most authors. So when she does fiction, let me know.
I will.
All right. So when we come back, Jess will be reading a brief passage about women's health from the book. And we are back with my favorite part. Jess is going to read a brief passage for us from the book. We have already alluded to this section, so I think it is perfect. So take it away.
After numerous deserving and ambitious women were denied admittance to the lecture halls of the University of Pennsylvania, Jefferson Medical College, and every other educational institution serving the medical profession in Philadelphia, a group of Quakers, whose religious doctrines included complete equality of the sexes, founded the Female Medical College of Pennsylvania within the city limits in 1850. For the next decade and a half, the school grew more and more popular as hundreds of women flocked to the city to finally learn in its lecture halls. When its board decided to change the institution's name to the more striking and official-sounding Women's Medical College of Pennsylvania in 1867, the Pennsylvania Medical Society finally decided to take action and issued a scathing and definitive statement against women practitioners. The statement declared that women should not practice medicine because women cannot stand the strain of practice, because their physiological necessities forbid the attempt, because if married they will neglect home duties, and because it was offensive that, at the very least, these women physicians could not consent to only attend women, and finally, simply because women's nerves are too delicate for the work. The statement had no effect on the school, which still surged with new female students each year. A year later, the society decided to push the issue even further by expelling any of its members who dared to teach at a women's college, and furthermore, to expel any member who is found to have consulted with women physicians in any medical capacity. Still, these actions did nothing to stem the growing tide of women who were actively pursuing a career in medicine. Soon, even larger institutions were being asked to allow women to attend lectures and witness surgeries. A high-ranking physician at the Pennsylvania Hospital was so appalled at the idea of having to lecture to mixed classes that he resigned his position to avoid the indignity of having to teach even one single woman. Not every male physician held this opinion. And thanks to these allies, and especially to the persistence and bravery of these early groundbreaking women who insisted on their right to be physicians, the first female doctor was elected to the same Pennsylvania Medical Society that had just two decades earlier sought to end her role in the profession entirely. The decision was met with much relief and rejoicing from the younger members of the community. Woman, as usual, finally had her way, a male member would later slyly write about the election. And yet the earth did not rock, the sea did not overflow its banks, and the stars did not fall.
A sign of a good author to me makes you want to read more. And I want to read a book about that time
period. Oh my God, right?
Like, I would love to read a book like this about one of the first, you know, Dr. Quinn medicine women, but in real life, during this time
period. I would definitely not be surprised if that book exists. We're going to have to do some research and regroup. Part 2.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, but is it going to be this lovely, nice, creative fiction, or is it going to be the facts and the I'm going to fall asleep over
two
paragraphs?
I'm going to do some research, but I know. It really did make me want her to expand on this. Not that I generally tweet anyone, but it makes me want to, like, tweet her and be like, hey, can you write this book now that you're done with that? Like, I know you're probably have nothing going on with your, like, tons of writing fellowships. And
yeah. Or even just,
she seems pretty busy.
We'd be good with just a, you know, a long article in the same
strain. Yeah, exactly. Like, I'll, you know, New Yorker or something.
Yeah.
Throw it in Slate, whatever. I'd read it.
So, any last thoughts before we go?
I just flipped open to a page and I was like, huh, maybe this one page will make me want to say something. This whole section about Meigs, when she writes about his demise, he had a really rough go of it. I mean, as his career went on and all of his thoughts and opinions, which we already knew were wrong, but were being disproved at the time, and he was really, like, sinking into professional disgrace. And then he had a few pretty traumatic deaths in his family, which I'm not like, oh, good for you, because, you know, I don't want that to happen to anyone. But it seems like his career really fell off. It felt satisfying. Not that I want anyone's life to go poorly, but he was wrong.
It was good.
The good guy won.
Yeah, and it was like, you're happy to see that. It wasn't, he was not able to delay progress.
Right.
Progress moved forward without him.
That's such a good point.
So I don't feel too bad.
It certainly feels relevant right now with, you know, we've got, definitely have certain issues, scientific issues and health issues that people definitely want to hold us back on. And, you know, we'll prevail in our certain causes.
We will come back for our final section of question and answers. And to wrap everything up, we are back with the bookish question and answers. And so the very first question I have to ask is, do you own a library card?
I do. I actually dug it up pretty recently.
Local, brown?
I do have a local, the Rhode Island Public Library System library card. I've had the same one since high school, if not middle school. I will confess why I don't use it is because I still owe like a pretty penny in late fees, and which is why I generally don't use it because I can't be trusted to return books on time. Yeah, I'm more of a book buyer.
Was that your first library card or did you have one before?
I'm sure I had one when I was younger that I probably lost, but you can tell this was from when I was a teenager because I like colored it in, and the library cards they issue don't look like that anymore.
Question number two after we did that. do you track what you read? Like Goodreads?
No, I really should be.
Okay.
I definitely plan to soon because my New Year's resolution is a book a week.
Okay. That's a good steady goal.
Yeah. I feel pretty confident about it. I have not been reading at the pace that I did when I was younger the last few years just because life gets in the way. Life happens. Yeah. And I don't appreciate that. I was a multi-book a week reader as a youth.
Is it just 52 over the year or just actually a book a week?
I'd really like to do a book a week.
Okay. I think you should start a blog. You should.
Yeah.
Because then you only have to do 52 posts.
That's perfect. I don't feel a lot of pressure to like only read classics or only read novels because I really enjoy graphic novels. I love short stories.
Favorite graphic novel? Do you have one?
I definitely do. I for some reason that question caught me off guard.
Oh, no, sorry.
I recently read Saga Volume 1, and I know I need to get on that. I also had a friend recently recommend Sex Criminals.
Blogger I follow has talked about that.
I need to get
good.
On that for my goal next year. I'll definitely want to finish Saga and get into Sex Criminals. I love the work of Alan Moore. Huge Alan Moore fan.
Yeah.
My favorite of his, I love The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Mm. I really enjoyed From Hell, too. Unfortunately, like, every bad movie ever has been adapted from Alan Moore books. It's really sad because his books are so great. Yeah. The weird thing, I couldn't really get into the V for Vendetta comic, which I own.
Interesting.
But I really enjoyed the movie, and that's, like, the only Alan Moore movie I've enjoyed. I love as much as I don't love the Jane Austen fan fiction, I love how they tied in all these fictional characters as superheroes and various other sundry people. But...
Well, that's you could read the Jane Austen Marvel adaptations.
There are now manga. I do want to read those manga
adaptations.
I do want to read those, and I'll read the gender swap book. I really need to make a list, but I love. Yeah, I'm not like I have to read a novel every week for 52 weeks. I'm definitely interested in
seeing what
taking
it
over the.
Yeah, it's a good steady goal.
Yeah,
I like
thank you. So I'll have to get on the Goodreads.
Yeah, and I just think it's useful. It's great because you can don't believe anyone's reviews. Just
right.
Don't. It just drives me crazy, so I avoid reading them. I do post mine there, obviously.
Yeah. And yours are great.
Mine are like, here's a regurgitation of all of my feelings, which is why I like them. That's why I call them responses instead of reviews.
Oh,
I get
I
out
like
of it.
That. That's smart. I might steal that from you.
Yeah. You're welcome to. Do you own a digital reading device?
I do not.
You don't? Ooh. I think you're the first. No. Yeah, I think you are the first person that doesn't. No iPad, no.
No.
Wow.
I think I would like a very basic, like, Kindle. Like, I would like the ones where it's not, like, a smartphone or actual tablet screen. I want the ones with, like, the e-ink. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be staring at a screen more than I already do. Because it hurts my eyeballs. I would like the, like, really basic. It's like not on the top of my list of things to buy, but I just
it's a good investment. It's
I bet it would be,
especially if you travel.
Yeah, I think I will eventually invest in one, although I do like carrying around a book. My copy of Dr. Motor's Marvels looks like it has been backed over by a truck, and part of the reason why I don't have a tablet is because I really like taking my books into the bath with me.
I read my Kindle in the bath.
Really?
I'm always cautious about it.
Yeah.
But what's great about the Kindle is you can put it in, it's just the right size. You can put it in a quart Ziploc baggie, zip it, and you can still touch it.
Oh, that is genius.
It does it. Because I used to do that in a pool. And I was concerned when I got the new one that is just touch. They don't have the buttons on the side anymore. I was concerned it wasn't going to work through the baggie anymore.
I love
but
that.
But it does. So.
That's brilliant.
But, it'll waterproof it for
I'm
you.
I'm really going to think about that.
What about audiobooks? Do you listen to audiobooks?
I have. I really like the NPR show Selected Shorts. Every episode they have it's usually famous actors come on and read excerpts or short stories. And you can get those as audiobooks. I've gotten those from the library before. I like a short story for my driving because I feel like I prefer audiobooks for short stories because it just feels easier to keep track.
Yeah.
Like if I'm starting and stopping with a novel every
constantly.
Time I'm driving, because I'm not going to listen to it like just chilling in my house. I'll get too distracted. I have to do it when I'm driving. I like audiobooks of short stories or like audio recordings of short stories. I highly recommend Selected Shorts.
Okay. I'm trying that there's one. I don't know if it's The New Yorker or if it's Slate. It might be NPR, where they have authors come on, like famous authors like Atwood's been on there, Sedaris has been on there, and they read short stories by other authors.
That definitely sounds like an NPR thing.
Yeah.
Although it's not ringing a bell at this moment.
I think I have it written down somewhere if I do, I'll send it to you. Because I don't listen to all of them anymore because sometimes they run like an hour because they do a brief introduction and then they read the short story and then they have a conversation about it and why they like it. And it's really interesting from, you know, this famous author talking about this other famous author. So what I do is when there's an author that I read or I'm interested in, whether they're reading or being read.
Yeah, I think
I guess,
that sounds okay.
Then I'll go in and listen to it. That's a short story. That's a new one. Everyone else I've asked has recommended a comedian, whether it's
that's a good option too.
That sort of thing. So okay.
I know someone recommended David Cross's audiobook to me. Said that was really funny. I didn't remember it. Yeah, you really can't go wrong with a comedian audiobook, I'm sure. But yeah, I just prefer short story audiobooks.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe I'll try that. Because I do. I think I like the idea. the finite amount. Yeah. Like, it gives you, like, a clear chapter. What was the last book that you read?
We Should All Be Feminists.
We should, okay.
Which I read this week.
Adichie. We'll stick Adichie. With their last name. And you enjoyed it, obviously.
Oh, very much so. It's really... I mean, it's short. It's... The style is very conversational. Because it's based off of a TED Talk she gave in 2012. And it really has some great counter-arguments for all of the basic anti-feminist arguments you get. Like, oh, you're a feminist, you hate men. It's like, no, I don't. You're a feminist, you don't shave your legs. What? Like, what does that even have to do with anything? Or,
yeah. Is she a proponent of global feminism? Is she talking about African feminism? Or
both, because she's from Africa.
She lives in the U.S. now, doesn't she, or no?
If I remember correctly from the reading, it said she lives in Nigeria and also the States.
Okay.
So she definitely does talk about her experiences with white American or like the... I was assuming it was white American feminists, but now that's mainstream. Probably wicked racist. Because she was talking about American feminists and was also talking about her experiences with feminism in Nigeria, different attitudes, and I definitely recommend it. It's like so little. It's like $8. I really enjoyed it. I'm really glad I read it.
Maybe that'll be an introduction to her, and then I can decide about Americana. So you've mentioned you really enjoy poetry and short stories. Would you say that is your favorite genre, or do you have a favorite book genre as well? For, like, full-length works. Not to negate those, because I think those are totally legitimate choices.
I think short stories are probably my favorite. Okay. I like love a short fiction story, love a short essay, love David Sedaris, love David Rakoff.
Do you have a favorite collection of short stories, or is it just...
Well, okay, so favorite collection of, like, short personal essays would be David Sedaris' Me Talk Pretty One Day.
I loved that one. Oh, I've not read it in a long time.
So beautiful. My two favorite writers are Jhumpa Lahiri, who wrote The Namesake, and Raymond Carver, who...
Oh, I didn't know Carver.
He wrote Cathedral. It's one of those short stories you usually read in high school or middle school. I think I read it in 8th grade and then 10th grade. They're very different writers. Carver's dead. He was from the West Coast, had a very working class upbringing. So a lot of his characters, he didn't do novels, he did poetry and short stories. But a lot of his characters, very working class. Cathedral was the first collection he wrote without the influence of a very domineering editor. And I have to say, the big book he was known for before Cathedral is called What We Talk About When We Talk About Love.
Okay.
Which
I only know that because of all of the spinoffs.
Yes.
What I Talk About When I Talk About Running. Yeah. And like, okay.
And did you see Birdman?
I haven't seen it.
Okay, so in Birdman, there's a play within the movie, and it's an adaptation of the short story, What We Talk About When We Talk About Love. And I actually really enjoy that book. Apparently, it's not cool for people who like Carver to like it, because it was so dominated by this editor, Gordon Lish. But he wrote Cathedral without Lish's input, and you can tell that, like, oh, no, he really was a good writer, and it wasn't just this editor that he's famous for working with. But my favorite of his is Cathedral, and then my favorite of Lahiri's is The Interpreter of Maladies, which is probably number one favorite.
Okay.
Like, number in my top two favorite books. My favorite novel is Lolita.
Okay, I'm reading that probably next year.
Oh, highly recommend it. I probably never would have read it, because I was like, oh, I'm not reading a book about a pedophile child abuser.
Yeah.
But I registered for a class when I was in college called Novelists, and I was assuming this would be about a range of novelists, and I show up on the first day and the professor's like, this class is all about Nabokov, and I was like, never read him. Oh. Probably read like one Russian book ever.
I'm impressed you stayed in the class.
I really immediately knew I would click with the professor.
Good.
He was really cool.
A good professor
really cool.
Can make it for you. Okay.
He was a great professor, and we didn't read Lolita first. We actually... Nabokov had like a short predecessor to Lolita, which wasn't about the same character, but was about a child molester called the Enchanter. So that was a hell of an introduction. But Lolita is a really disturbing concept and a really disturbing story in general. In my opinion, the greatest piece of writing ever. And like, it was originally, written in Russian, because Nabokov's Russian, but he wrote it in English as well. And it's just really incredible.
Interesting. You're making me want to read it a little more.
I hope so.
I've read the big, not just the big Russians, but the big ass tomes.
Right.
War and Peace, Dr. Zhivago, and
Anna Karenina.
Anna Karenina. And, you know, those are just... I see this one on the shelf, and I'm like, oh, that looks like a nice size.
It's not that big, but yeah. Favorite novel ever. Definitely recommend that, but...
Okay. Well, then, the very, very last question is, if you could make me read one book, what would it be? Knowing I'm going to read that one, would you pick something else?
I would definitely say Interpretive Maladies by Jhumpa Lahiri.
Okay. And those are short stories?
Short stories. Okay. She's written a couple novels, and she's written a couple collections of short stories. Interpretive Maladies is fantastic, and it's... If you prefer writing over story, it's definitely a good one. Because not that the stories aren't bad by any means, but they're not, like, big, sweeping dramas.
Okay.
They're very much about... families and the Indian American immigrant experience, which, you know, as a white woman, that's not something that would immediately jump out at me. Like, oh, book about the Indian American experience. That's just not something that would have crossed my mind to, like, you know, be on my bookshelf. But her writing is so beautiful. It's like, this is the only thing I ever want to read. Like, why would I have not thought to read about this? I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
But that sounds good. Amazing.
It's like Aptowitz, where I want to read all about science history.
Right. Yeah.
Sign of a good writer. Yeah. All right. Well, that was everything that I have. So thank you so much for doing this with me.
Jeff, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Most of your social media, your Twitter. I'm really up and savvy down with the kids. Your Twitter, it's private, isn't it?
I'm a private social media person.
So, well, Jess is a private social media, but you can, you know, check me out at my blog, jeffwhaley.com, and on Twitter at jeff_whaley. And that is it. So, thank you so much. Bye for now.
Bye.